We're going to speak this afternoon on the subject of Europe, the EU, and Antichrist Kingdom. And that's particularly pertinent to us today because so much is happening in Europe and it's in the news all the time, and we need to know where it's all going to end up, because the Bible tells us the final story to what's going to happen with Europe, and it's all very clear in the scriptures. Now we're going to read a portion of God's word, and from Daniel and chapter 7 we're going to read from verse 15, and this has to do with the prophecy of Daniel. Daniel was given a dream of four beasts, and Daniel had a particular interest in the fourth of these beasts, because it's the fourth beast that will be in existence when Jesus Christ comes again and establishes his kingdom. So it's so very important for us to be able to identify these beasts in the dream of Daniel, and then to be able to apply it to the world situation today. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings or kingdoms which shall arise out of the earth. Now, here we have an interpretation. You know, one of the things that we have difficulty with our amillennialist friends is that they spiritualize the scriptures. They put symbolic meanings on things. Now, there is symbol in the Bible. But when God gives us symbols, he also gives us the meaning of the symbols. And what the amillennialist does, of course, is take symbols and put his own interpretation on it. And he doesn't take anything else as literal. Now, the four beasts are four kingdoms, the scripture says, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet, and of the ten horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, another little horn, and before whom three fell, as three of the ten. Even that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was set and given to the saints of the Most High. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus, he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, that's future tense, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time, and times, and dividing of times. That's 1 + 2 + 1/2, which is 3.5 years. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." God will bless the reading of his wonderful word. Well, friends, Europe, the EU, and the Antichrist. We've been looking over these last few days at the message of Bible prophecy, and it's good for us to get the overall picture. Remember, we said there were three classes of people: the Jew, the Gentile, and the church. We must differentiate between the Jew, the Gentile, and the church. The church has only been going since Pentecost, since the cross, and will end with the rapture, as we saw this morning. The church will not go through the tribulation, which is 7 years of judgment that God will send upon this earth after the rapture has taken place, and then Christ will return to the earth at the end of the tribulation to establish his millennial kingdom. We established that this morning in the scriptures. Now, the times of the Gentiles is a period of time. Jesus said in Luke chapter 21, "Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." So that defines what the times of the Gentiles are. The times of the Gentiles is when there is Gentile occupation of the city of Jerusalem. We know that began with Nebuchadnezzar in 606 BC, and it will conclude when Jesus comes and he deals with Antichrist, and the Antichrist and his false prophet are cast into the lake of fire at the end of the Great Tribulation. What I want you to notice in this little chart on the screen is that the Gentile world powers that have existed consist of Babylon, Persia, Greece, and then Rome. And the final stage of the Roman Empire will be a 7-year period, which will be the Great Tribulation. And it's during that 7-year period that Antichrist will dominate the world. So that is the times of the Gentiles from 606 BC right down to the coming of Jesus Christ. Now in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel had a dream, and he dreamt that there were four beasts. And these four beasts represent the four Gentile world empires. Prior to Babylon, there was more than one Gentile world power. There was the Assyrian Empire in the north and the Egyptian Empire in the south. And it wasn't until 606 BC that Babylon, and actually 612, when Nineveh was overthrown by the Babylonians, and Babylon then finally overthrew Egypt, and Babylon became the undisputed single Gentile world power. So from 606 BC, when Babylon first of all conquered Jerusalem, we have the times of the Gentiles, Gentile occupation in Jerusalem taking place, and Babylon became the first of the world's Gentile empires, Nebuchadnezzar, the first king. Well, we have the four beasts here described in Daniel chapter 7. The first was like a lion with eagle's wings, and that was the first of those world empires, Babylon. It was replaced by Persia, which is described in this prophecy as being a bear with three ribs in its mouth. And it was a picture of the Persian Empire, which followed the Babylonian Empire in 536 BC. The Persian Empire had the three ribs in its mouth. See, and these ribs say unto the bear, "Arise, devour much flesh." Now that, of course, indicates that there were three nations that made up the Persian Empire. There was Babylonia and the Medes and the Persians. Those three nations, represented by the three ribs in the mouth of the bear, they said to the Persian Empire, "Arise, devour much flesh." And then the Persian Empire went out, of course, conquered Asia Minor, conquered Egypt, and right across to the border of India. In fact, we know in the days of Esther there were 127 provinces of the kingdom of Persia from the border of Ethiopia, which was the southern border of Egypt in those days, to the border of India. It was a vast empire. And that was the result of the three ribs saying, "Arise, devour much flesh." They even went across through Asia Minor and crossed the Hellespont into Europe. And they embarrassed the Greeks and the Macedonians. And that's what aroused Alexander the Great ultimately to come and take vengeance on the Persian Empire. Well, in 332, Alexander the Great, the first of the Grecian emperors, he was the son of Philip of Macedonia, and as a young man he led the Grecian armies against the Persians. He had four large battles with Darius, the Persian king, and defeated him in every case. Darius had a vast army. Alexander only had a small army of about 30-odd thousand men, but his brilliance in directing his forces enabled them to overthrow the massive armies of the Persians. Matter of fact, King Darius came out, he built a great grandstand for himself and his family to watch the battle. And Alexander, when he saw this, he directed his cavalry to go straight through the ranks of the Persian army and to forget about the Persian soldiers and go straight for the king of Persia. And when he got there, of course, Darius saw him coming and hopped on his horse and went for his life and left his wives and his children and his mother behind. And Alexander captured them all. Later on, Darius wrote a letter to Alexander and said, "I want my wife and my mother and my children back." Well, Alexander said, "You could have them back if you acknowledge that I am the king of Asia and you will come and bow before me." Of course, Darius wouldn't do that. And so it was necessary for Alexander to have two more battles with the Persians before he finally gained the ascendancy over the entire Persian Empire. The Grecian Empire, of course, was vast, and Alexander, having moved across through Persia, he went up into Asia Minor, across to India. He defeated King Porus, king of India, who came against him with a vast army of elephants. And he then returned to Babylon, and he was going to go down into Arabia to conquer all of Arabia. And then he had a drunken feast with a mate, either got malaria or some wog or some disease, and had a high fever for about 2 weeks and finally died. Some people think that they might have put poison in his cup. Some of his soldiers wanted to go home to Greece. They'd been away from home for so long, several years fighting, and they wanted to go home. But, well, whether he was poisoned or whether he died of malaria or some other disease, we don't know. But anyway, he died at Babylon. And that changed the course of the Grecian Empire. You'll notice that the leopard has four heads and four wings, like a fowl. And that represents, of course, the Grecian Empire after Alexander. In 306 BC, the Grecian Empire was divided into four parts. It was spread through the four generals of Alexander, and they took over four segments of the Grecian Empire. One was in northern Greece, Macedonia, one in southern Greece, one in Syria and Mesopotamia, and part of Asia Minor, and another down into Egypt. Now, then there was the fourth empire, which was Rome. It superseded the Greeks, and in 63 BC, Pompey, the Roman general, captured the northern kingdom of Syria, which was the last remains of the Grecian Empire, and they came under Roman control. In 63 BC, he captured Jerusalem. And that's why we put the date of 63 there, because it's the time when the Roman Empire captured Jerusalem. And this, of course, has to do with Israel. The prophecies of Scripture relate to Israel in God's plan. Well, the Roman Empire went on. Of course, it existed long before 63 BC. It existed as a monarchy, and then as the Republic, and then in 31 BC it became an imperial Rome under the Caesars. But in 63 it was still the Republican stage, and Pompey was the general who captured Jerusalem. Well, friends, in the book of Daniel we have the times of the Gentiles. Daniel was writing from Babylon. He was writing from a Gentile country where he'd been taken away as captive. And in the first of the three captivities that Nebuchadnezzar made of Jerusalem. And there are two parallel prophecies in this book of Daniel. One is in chapter 2 of the image of Nebuchadnezzar. And the one is in second one is in chapter 7, which is the dream that Daniel had of the four beasts that we've just referred to. Now, both of these cover the same period of time. In the case of the four beasts, the Bible tells us that at the end of the fourth beast, there would be 10 kings, 10 horns. And then there would be a little horn that would rise up and overthrow 3 of those horns. But in the day of that little horn, the time of that little horn, there would be a kingdom that God would establish over the world, and that would be a universal and everlasting kingdom, the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, the same picture is seen in the image in chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar had this dream. We won't go into the details, but it had a head of gold and shoulders of silver and belly and thigh of brass and legs of iron and feet of iron and clay. And the interpretation is given by Daniel to Nebuchadnezzar. He said, "Nebuchadnezzar, thou art the head of gold." The Babylonian Empire was represented by the head of gold, 536 BC. It lasted 70 years. And then there came the Persian Empire, represented by the bear and by the shoulders of silver. And then the Grecian Empire came, represented by the belly and thigh of brass. And then the legs of iron, the Roman Empire. And the feet of iron and clay with the 10 toes corresponding to the 10 horns on the fourth beast in chapter 7. And this represents the last stage of the Roman Empire before he sees a rock coming down from heaven, smiting the image on the feet, and that rock became a mountain which fills the whole earth. And the interpretation is that in the days of these kings, the last 10 kings, in the Roman Empire, Jesus Christ would come from heaven, smite the Gentile nations, and Christ would establish his kingdom universally throughout the entire world. Well, let's just look at the map. The first of these empires was the Babylonian Empire, and there is the extent of that empire. Then the second empire was the Persian Empire, and there again is the extent from India into Europe and down to Ethiopia. Then we have the Third World Empire, the Grecian Empire, as extensive as the Persian one, but of course occupying more of Europe because Alexander the Great came from Greece and Macedonia. And then after Alexander died, there were the divisions in the Grecian Empire, the four divisions. There was the King of the North, the Seleucid Kings, the King of the South, which was the Egyptian kings, the Ptolemies, and then the other two were smaller kingdoms in Macedonia and in Greece. So the Grecian Empire divided up into four. That was the four heads and the four wings of the leopard. And then we have the fourth empire, which is the Roman Empire. You can see this is much more extensive. It goes right up to the Scottish border, right across North Africa, and all of Europe except for Germany. The Germanic tribes were able to withstand the Roman armies, and they were a constant source of annoyance to the Romans. But this was the fourth empire on earth. And the Imperial Rome went from 63-64 BC to 476 AD, when the Germans tribes came down from the north, the Hun, not the Huns, the Goths, the Vandals, the Ostrogoths, and the Visigoths, and these people, the Franks, and the Lombards, they came down and overthrew the imperial Rome, and the last emperor left the Western Roman Empire in Rome in 476 AD. Well, friends, here is the picture of the Germanic tribes that came down from 410. They sacked Rome and then finally took over the Roman Empire. Here are the German tribes that were involved in that invasion of Imperial Rome. And then, of course, was formed the Holy Roman Empire. In 800 AD, the Pope in Rome at the time appointed Charlemagne as the Emperor of a Holy Roman Empire. And you can see there that it took in most of Italy and certainly most of Central Europe. And that continued on for about 1,000 years, from 800 AD. The boundaries shown there were in 814, but actually Charlemagne was crowned in 800 AD, and the last emperor of the Holy Roman Empire left the throne in 1806, which was the time of Napoleon, when Napoleon was rampaging across Europe. Well, since then, of course, there has been a number of attempts to bring the Roman Empire together again. Napoleon tried to do it and failed, mainly due to the British, Wellington, and the British fleet. The British fleet defeated the French fleet in Alexandra Harbour, Abuda Bay in Egypt, and of course Wellington defeated Napoleon's armies on the continent. Here's the history that you can see of the Roman Empire. This is the fourth beast on earth. This is the fourth stage of Gentile power on earth before Jesus Christ comes again. You see, the Roman Empire goes back into a monarchy period for 755 BC. Then it became the Republic in 509 BC. And then it became the Imperial Caesars in 31 BC. And that continued through, as we've just said, to 476 AD, when the last of the emperors left the throne in Rome and the Germanic tribes came down and overthrew the power of Rome. Now, friends, this is very interesting. It's something that I hadn't focused on for a long time. That actually, the Roman Empire has now been dominated by Germanic peoples. And it's the Germans who are the dominant factor in the European Union today. One of my my grandfather was a German, and so I have relatives who are Germans. But friends, the German tribes were being forced out of their lands by the Asian Huns and Avars who were coming in from the east. And they were driven down into south, into Rome, into Spain, and across into North Africa. And the Vandals occupied Morocco and Algeria and Tunis, as we know it today. And then they came back into Rome across the Mediterranean to occupy Rome at one stage. Well, that is the Roman history. I want you to notice that it has continued on right down through the years. You can see there from 800 AD that the Holy Roman Empire continued on. You see down at the bottom of that chart, the Byzantine or Eastern Roman Empire, which began in 330 AD, went right through to 1453 AD. That's when the Ottoman Turks overran Constantinople and finished off the Byzantine Eastern Roman Empire, which was over in Turkey as we know it today. So the Roman Empire has never ceased to exist. You know, preterists want to tell us that the second coming of Christ took place in 70 AD, and the Great Tribulation took place in 70 AD. And they sort of forget that the Roman Empire went on for and is still going on today. They can't see the prophecies concerning the judgment of God upon the Roman Empire in the last days at the coming of Christ. And they think Christ came in 70 AD. That's a strange interpretation. And then, friends, the papacy, of course, was the influence that has worked with the Holy Roman Empire which was secular, and the papacy has influenced the secular Roman Empire all down through the years, and is still influencing the Roman Empire today. It is the papacy that is behind the European Union coming together today. In fact, Chancellor Adenauer, who was for many years the Chancellor of Germany, used to go away for 2 weeks at a time to a monastery to get his instructions as to how to run Germany within the European Union. And there is this strong Catholic influence now throughout Europe, and the papacy is still there pulling the strings today. Well, after Napoleon, there was Kaiser. He tried to bring it together. And then Hitler tried to bring Europe together and failed. And then since 1957, the Treaty of Rome was signed, significantly the Treaty of Rome, and it has now brought into being a united Europe, breaking down the borders of each of the countries. You don't need passports to go from one country to another in most of the countries in Europe today, because they're all becoming like one nation and each country becoming a state within the European Union. And so, friends, we have today a superpower in Europe emerging. Well, let's turn to Revelation chapter 17, and we'll see there how that the influence and the merging of the Roman Catholic Church and the European Union is playing a very important part in the prophecies of the last day. In chapter 17, John sees a woman riding a beast. The beast has seven heads and ten horns. And this is the same beast that Daniel saw. Daniel saw a beast that had ten horns and a little horn. Whereas this one has seven heads and ten horns. And this one is ridden by a harlot woman. And this harlot woman, dear friends, is described in chapter 17. Let's just read the description and see who God interprets this woman to be. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore, the great prostitute, that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-coloured beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abomination and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will show thee the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns. You'll notice God says he's going to give the interpretation. And this is where amillennialism falls apart. You know, the preterists interpret this harlot woman as being Jerusalem and Israel, because the preterists are anti-Semitic. They think that everything in the book of Revelation is about God judging the Jews. And that happened in 70 AD. That's the whole, the centerpiece of preterist interpretation of Bible prophecy. And it's totally wrong. This woman is not Israel. This is not Jerusalem. We'll find God's interpretation is given to us here as to what this woman represents. Let's read it. Verse 8. And the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, which when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind that hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman said it. Now friends, this beast is obviously connected with the beast of Daniel. Daniel saw a beast with 10 horns. Here we have in chapter 13, we see a picture of a beast with 7 heads and 10 horns. And Antichrist is obviously prefigured in that beast in Revelation chapter 13. And here in chapter 17, we see the same beast with 10 horns and with 7 heads. And this is a continuing picture of the same particular nation. Now, what did the fourth beast with 10 horns represent in the book of Daniel chapter 7? It was the fourth kingdom on earth. And that fourth kingdom was going to continue through till the second coming of Jesus Christ. That was the Roman Empire, the fourth kingdom on earth. The first was Babylon, the second was Persia, the third was Greece, and the fourth was Rome. And Rome has been continuing down through the years. What then do the 7 heads represent on this beast? It says the 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. Now friends, we all know, and anybody who picks up a history book will see, that Rome is the city of 7 hills. There's no doubt about it. Rome is the city of 7 hills. As a matter of fact, Constantinople, which was the capital of Eastern Roman Empire, also was built on 7 hills. So whether you take Eastern Roman Empire or Western Roman Empire at Rome, both cities were on 7 hills. It's speaking about the Roman Empire. So this beast is obviously the Roman Empire and representing, of course, the leader of that empire, the last leader, which is Antichrist. So let's look at the last verse of Revelation chapter 17, because it tells us again what this woman represents. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Now friends, John wrote in 96 AD, at the end of the reign of Domitian, the Roman emperor. And the great city which was reigning over the kings of the earth in John's day, in 96 AD, was none other than Rome. Rome was the capital of the world. And this woman is described as that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth in 96 AD. She is described as sitting on the 7 heads as sitting on 7 hills, which is Rome. Friends, there is no doubt that this woman is identified with Rome. And so that is settled. We're told in verse 1 that she sits upon many waters. Now, if you look down into verse 15, you'll see that the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So here this harlot woman, which is Rome, has her influence spread over many waters, which is nations and kingdoms and tongues and so on. She's international. And friends, no one can debate today that the papacy is indeed international. Their spread, their tentacles are right throughout the world. South America is dominantly Catholic. Eastern Europe is dominant. All of Europe is dominantly Catholic. Their tentacles go right across. Vietnam, a lot of Catholic influence in Vietnam. And all through Asia, the Catholics are through China. And in Australia and in New Zealand. And it doesn't matter where you go, the papacy has its tentacles throughout the entire world. And friends, this woman obviously is international and is identified with Rome. The Vatican is located at Rome. That's where the headquarters are situated. Now friends, this woman is also guilty of the martyrdom of multitudes of saints, of Bible-believing Christians, because it says the woman was drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Friends, what other organization in the world has slaughtered the Christians down through the centuries? You know, we tend to forget what has taken place. Children at school are not taught the history of the Inquisitions and of the Crusades. You know, these were black patches on the history of Europe. When Spain, the Spanish Inquisition, under the Queen and King of Spain, with special permission from the Pope, were able to take and slaughter tens of thousands of Christians and Jews. When Columbus sailed out of port from Spain to go to America, he wrote in his logbook that the harbour was full of ships loading Jewish refugees who were fleeing and had to get out of Spain, or else they would have been killed. They had the options: convert to Roman Catholicism, or be killed, or get out. And most of them took the option to get out. And they went across, and places like Turkey received the Jewish refugees at that time. The Turkish Empire was expanding. They needed administrative skills, and they used the Jews to help build up the Ottoman Turk Empire. Well, friends, here we have the bloodthirsty activities of the Roman Catholic Church. Well, let's read a little bit more. We're told here that the 10 horns in verse 12, which thou sawest, are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet. In other words, they were still future in 96 AD. And it says, but receive power as kings 1 hour, just a short period of time, with the beast. These have one mind and give their power and strength unto the beast. Now, friends, this beast is none other than the Antichrist, as the final head of the Roman Empire. We read about that in chapter 13. He has his false prophet. He has his idol image. He has his mark, which he puts on the forehand or the forehead of everybody in the world. And if they don't do it, he's able to put them to death. And so we have the beast here, and these 10 horns are the final 10 divisions of the Roman Empire. You know, friends, we are seeing today the Roman Empire come together, and this is Europe today. And the Roman Empire will be divided into 10 parts. But she is being influenced now by the harlot woman, by Roman Catholicism. If you look at Eastern European countries that have just joined the Roman Empire, the European Union, there were 10 nations that have come in. Malta is a very strongly Catholic island. A friend of mine was a Maltese Christian. He went back there as a missionary, and they had a very tough time seeking to preach the gospel in Malta because of the very strong Catholic influence. Cyprus also became a member of the European Union, but the rest of them are Eastern European countries like Poland, where the Pope came from. They're very strong Catholic countries. Hungary, very strong Catholic countries. One of the new ones in the Balkans that's already being negotiated with to come in the future is Croatia, which is extremely strong Roman Catholic. Some of them, like Serbia, is a Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox Church, like the Russian Orthodox. And they are, of course, very similar to Roman Catholicism, although they don't recognise the Pope at the present time. But friends, it's interesting that the press is acknowledging, and the European Union is acknowledging, that they are represented by the figure of a woman riding a beast. This is an article out of Time magazine in December 1991. And it was an article on the emerging European Union. And this is the picture that they had next to the one of the advertisements for this article. And it shows a woman, a harlot woman, with a European flag with the 12 stars of the European flag. And the 12 stars, you'll notice, are placed around the head of this woman riding the beast. Why is that? What do the 12 stars represent? Friends, the 12 stars represent the 12 stars of the Virgin Mary. If you look at Catholic literature, they have the pictures of the Virgin Mary with 12 stars about her head. You say, how do they get that? Well, they misinterpret Revelation chapter 12. In Revelation chapter 12, we have the picture of a woman with 12 stars about her head and the sun and the moon under her feet. And of course, it's a picture of Israel. And we know that because If you go back to the Old Testament, Joseph had a dream. Remember when Joseph was a young man? He had a dream of the 11 stars bearing down to his star, and he told his father Jacob about this dream. And Jacob said to him, "Do you mean to tell me that I and your mother and your brethren are all going to bow down to you?" So obviously Jacob interpreted the stars as being the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 sons of Israel that became the 12 tribes. And friends, the imagery in Revelation chapter 12 of the woman with 12 stars about her head is a picture of Israel. And if you go through that chapter, you'll see that everything that's said about it concerns Israel. But the Roman Catholic Church interprets that woman as being the Virgin Mary. And the 12 stars about the head is a figure which they use on their advertising, on their tracks. As a matter of fact, all over the place they use it. There's a great image in these pictures, by the way, came out of the Time magazine. Here is a photo that I had passed to me by a full-time Christian worker who was working with radio station HCJB, Heralding Christ Jesus Blessings, in the Voice of the Andes in South America, in Quito, Ecuador. And at the city of Quito, where HCJB has their radio broadcasting station, there is this huge image on the hill overlooking Quito of the Virgin Mary. I want you to notice the size of people standing at the fence, at the base of this building. That building is 7 stories high. On top of the building is a great globe of the world. On top of that globe is a serpent. And then there is this massive image of the Virgin Mary standing with her foot on the serpent's head. You know, friends, that comes from the Bible. You go back to Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, and you find that the scripture tells us that the seed of the woman would bruise the serpent's head. Not the woman, but the seed of the woman. And Jesus Christ is the seed of the woman. And at Calvary's cross, he bruised Satan's head. He destroyed him that had the power of death, that is the devil, at the cross of Calvary. But the Roman Catholic Church says that Mary has her head, her foot, upon the head of the serpent. And then we have the 12 stars of Mary about the head. Friends, I've been a structural engineer for many, many years. And in the design and construction industry, I can tell you this, that the stresses that must occur in a structure of such a shape, in an exposed location on a mountain in South America overlooking a city like that, must be incredible. Any engineer who designed that to stand up there must have done wind tunnel tests, and you couldn't design that by codes. It's an amazing design of a structure because the torsional effects of the wind, because everything's out of symmetry. If you catch on the wings of the Virgin Mary and give it a twist, and that creates a whole lot of stresses which are not normal in buildings that we design. And so, friends, that is a tremendous example of the papacy and its desire to worship the woman. The 12 stars represent the Virgin Mary, the stars of the Virgin Mary, and the 12 stars are on the flag of the European Union.